Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Interstellar Patrol 2 by Christopher Anvil. Edited by Eric Flint. Narrated by Eric Michael Summerer. The Claw and the Clock. Iadrabel Vyer glanced over the descriptive documents thoughtfully.
A promising world. However, considering the extent of the Earthmen's possessions and the size of their space force, one hesitates to start trouble.
Margash Grella bowed deferentially.
Understood, Excellency. But there is a significant point that we have just discovered. We have always supposed this planet was a part of their Federation. It is not. It is independent.
Vyer got his two hind ripping claws up onto their rest.
How did we come by this information?
One of their merchant ships got off course, and Admiral Arvast Nade answered the distress signal.
Grella gave a bone-popping sound, signifying wry humor.
Needless to say, the Earthmen were more distressed after the rescue than before.
Vyer sat up.
So, contrary to my specific instructions, Nade has given the Earthmen pretext to strike at us?
Excellency, restraint of the kill instinct requires high moral development when dealing with something as helpless as these Earthmen. Nade himself did not take part in the orgy, of course, but he was unable to restrain his men. It was the Earthlings' fault because they were not armed. If they had been in full battle armor, with their tools of war. Well, who wants to crack his claws on a thing like that? But they presented themselves as defenseless offerings. The temptation was too great.
Were the Earthmen aware of the identity of the rescue craft?
Grella looked uneasy.
Admiral Nade feared some trap and, undertook to forestall treachery by using an Ursoid recognition signal.
Vyer could feel the scales across his back twitch. This fool, Nade, had created out of nothing the possibility of war with both Earth and Ursa. Vyer said shortly,
"Having given the Ursoid recognition signal, the Earthmen naturally would not be prepared. Therefore, Nade would naturally be unable to restrain his men. So what?"
Grella gave his bone-grinding chuckle. And suddenly Vyer saw it as amusement at the ability of Nade to disobey Vyer's orders and get away with it. Vyer's right-hand battle pincer came up off its rest. His manipulators popped behind his bony chest armor. Three death-dealing stings snicked into position in his left-hand battle pincer. Grella hurtled into a corner, all claws menacingly thrust out, but screaming,
"Excellency! I meant no offense! Forgive my error! I mean only respect."
"Then get to the point. Let's have the facts,"
Grella said in a rush.
"Admiral Nade saved several Earthlings to question them. They saw him as their protector and were frank. It seems the Earthmen on this planet have a method for eliminating warlike traits from their race and..."
"From their race on this planet alone?"
"Yes. The planet was settled by very stern religionists who believe in total peace unless attacked. They eliminate individuals who show irrepressible warlike traits."
Vyer settled back in his seat.
"They believe in total peace unless attacked. Then what?"
"Apparently, they believe in self-defense. A little impractical if proper precautions have not been made."
How did the crewmen know about this?"
"They had made many delivery trips to the planet. It seems that the Earthmen call this planet, among themselves, Storehouse. The codename is given in the documents there, and it is formally named Faith. But to the Earthmen, it is Storehouse."
"Why?"
"These religious Earthlings have perfected means to preserve provisions with no loss whatsoever. Even live animals are in some way frozen, gassed, irradiated, or somehow treated, so they are just as good when they come out as when they went in. This is handy for shippers who have a surplus due to a temporary glut on the market or because it's a bad year for the buyers. So, within practicable shipping distance, Storehouse does a thriving business. preserving goods from time of surplus to a time of need.
Vyre absently grated his ripping claws on their rests.
And the basis of this process is not generally known?
No, sir. They have a monopoly. Moreover, they use their monopoly to enforce codes of conduct on the shippers. Shippers who employ practices they regard as immoral, or who deal in goods they disapprove of, have their storage quotas cut. Shippers they approve of get reduced rates. And they are incorruptible, since they are religious fanatics, like our cult of the sea, who resist the last molt and stick to gills.
Well, well, this does offer possibilities. But would the Earthmen be willing to lose this valuable facility, even if it is not a member of their federation? On the other hand, I wonder if the fanatics have antagonized the Earthmen as the cursed sea cult antagonizes us. That collection of righteous clams.
Grella nodded.
From what Admiral Nade learned, it certainly seems so. The crew of the distressed ship, for instance, had just had their quota cut because they had been caught shooting craps, a form of gambling, while on their own ship waiting to unload.
Yes, that sounds like it. Nade, I suppose, has his fleet in position?
Excellency, he chafes at the restraints,
no doubt.
Vyre balanced the possibilities.
It is rumored that some who have attacked independent Earth-settled planets have not enjoyed the experience.
The Earthlings would be bound to spread such rumors. But what can mere religious fanatics do against the guns of our men? The fanatics are skilled operators of a preserving plant. Of what use is that in combat?
Vyre settled back. Either the Earthmen were truly unprepared, in which case he, Vyre, would receive partial credit for a valuable acquisition. Or else the Earthmen were prepared, and Nade would get such a dent in his shell that his reputation would never recover.
All right, said Vyre cheerfully. But we must have a pretext. These religious fanatics must have delivered some insult that we want to avenge, and it must fit in with their known character. If possible, it must rouse sympathy, even for us. Let's see.
Elder Hugh Phillips eyed the message dourly. These lobsters have their gall. Look at this. Deacon Bentley adjusted his pennant shirt to make the bristles bite in better, and took the message. He read aloud in a dry, methodical voice.
Headquarters, the Imperial Hatchery, Claftschiffran. Lot of heathenish gabble there, I'll skip all that. Let's see. Pursuant to the blessings of the fertility god for Flavritschitzfree, pursuant to the blessings of the fertility god, what's his name, the royal brood has exceeded expectations this season. All praise to so-and-so, etc., etc., and exceeds the possibility of the royal hatchery to handle. We therefore favor you with the condescension of becoming for the next standard year an auxiliary royal hatchery, consecrated according to the ritual of Faflavrit, etc., and under due direction of the imperial priesthood and appropriate broodmasters, you to receive, in addition to the honor, your best standard payment for the service of maintaining the royal brood in good health, and returning same in time for the next season, undamaged by the delay, to make up the deficiency predicted by the broodmasters. The fertility god, what's his name, directs us through his priesthood to command your immediate notice of compliance, as none of the previous brood must be endangered by delay.
Deacon Bentley looked up.
To make it short, we're supposed to store the royal lobsters for a year. Is that it?
Evidently.
There's no difficulty there. Bentley eyed the message coldly. As for being consecrated according to the lobster's fertility god, there we part company.
Elder Phillips nodded.
They do offer good pay, however.
All worldly money is counterfeit. The only reward is in heaven.
Amen. But from their own heathen viewpoint, the offer is fair. Obviously, we can't accept it. But we must be fair in return, even to lobsters. We will take care of the royal brood, but as for their priesthood... He cleared his throat. With due humility, we must decline that provision. Now, who writes the answer?
Brother Fry would be ideal for it.
He's on a fast. How about Deacon Fennell?
No good. He went into a cell on Tuesday, committed himself for a month.
He did, eh? Abel's boy, Wilder, would have been good at this. Too bad. Phillips nodded.
Unfortunately, not all can conquer their own nature. Some require grosser enemies.
He sighed.
Let's see, how do we start the thing off?
Let's just say, we will put up your brood for so and so much per year. We decline the consecration. That's the gist of the matter. Then we nail some diplomacy on both ends of it, dress it up a little, and there we are.
I wish Brother Fry were here. This nonsense can eat up time. However, he's not here, so let's get at it.
Iadrabel Vyer read the message over again intently. From Central Contracting Office, Penitence City, Planet of Faith, to Headquarters, the Imperial Hatchery, Klaft Shifran Zishopendishkla. Dear Sirs, we are in receipt of your request of the 22nd instant that we put the excess of the royal brood in storage for a period approximating one standard year. We agree to do this in accord with our standard rate schedule D appended, suitable for non-preferred live shipments. Kindly note that these rates apply from date of delivery to the storehouse entrance to date of reshipment from the same point. We regret that we must refuse your other terms, to wit, A, accompaniment of the shipment by priests and broodmasters, B, consecration to the fertility god, referred to in your communication. In reference to A, no such accompaniment is necessary or allowed. In reference to B, the said god, so-called, is, of course, non-existent. In view of the fact that your race is known to be heathen, these requests will not be held against you in determining the rate schedule, beyond placing you in the non-preferred status. We express our appreciation for this order and trust that our service will be found satisfactory in every respect. Truly yours, Hugh Bentley, Chief Assistant, Central Contracting Office.
Vyer sat back, absently scratched his ripping claws on their rest, reached out with a manipulator, and punched a call button.
A door popped open, and Margash Grella stepped in and bowed.
Excellency?
Read this.
Grella read it and looked up.
These people are, as I told you, sir, like our sea cult, only worse.
They certainly take an independent line for an isolated planet dealing with an interstellar empire, and on a sensitive subject at that.
Not so, Excellency. It is independent from our viewpoint. If you read between the lines, you can see that, for them, they are bent over backwards.
Vyer absently squeaked the sharp tips of his right-hand battle claw together.
Maybe. In any case, I don't think we would be quite justified by this reply in doing anything drastic. However, I think we can improve on this. Tell Nade to get his claws sharpened up, and we'll see what happens with the next message.
Hugh Phillips handed the message to Deacon Bentley. There seems to have been something wrong with our answer to these crabs.
What, did we lose the order? Let's see.
Bentley's eyebrows raised.
Due to your maligning the religious precepts of our race, we must demand a full retraction and immediate apology.
When did we do that?
There was something about that part where we said they were heathens.
They are heathens, I know. Truth is truth.
That is so. Nevertheless, well, Brother Fry would know how to handle this.
Unfortunately, he is not here. Well, what to do about this?
Phillips looked at it.
What is there to do?
Bentley's look of perplexity cleared away.
True. We can't have lobsters giving us religious instruction.
He looked wary.
On the other hand, we mustn't fall into the sin of pride, either.
Here, let's have a pen.
Phillips wrote rapidly, frowned, then glanced at Bentley.
How is your sister's son coming along, her next to eldest?
Bentley shook his head.
I fear he is not meant for righteousness. He has refused to do his penances.
Phillips shook his head, then looked at what he had written. After a moment, he glanced up. If the truth were told, some of us shaved by pretty close ourselves. I suppose it's to be expected. The first settlers were certainly descended from a rough lot. He cleared his throat. I am not so sure my eldest is going to make it. Bentley caught his breath. Perhaps you judge too harshly. No. As a boy, he did not play marbles. He lined them up in ranks and studied the formations. We would find him with his mother's pie plate and a pencil, holding them to observe how a space fleet in disk might destroy one in column. I have tried to. Phillips cleared his throat. Here, read this. See if you can improve it. We must be strictly honest and must not truckle to these heathens. It would be bad for them as well as us.
Amen, Elder. Let's see now.
Iadrabel Vyer straightened up in his seat, reread the message, and summoned Margash Grella. Margash bowed deferentially.
Excellency?
This is incredible. Read this.
Grella read aloud.
Sirs, we acknowledge receipt of yours of the 28th instant, and are constrained in all truth to reply that you are heathen, that your so-called fertility god is no god at all, that your priests are at best misled and at worst representatives of the devil, and that we can on no account tolerate priests of heathen religions on this planet. As these are plain facts, there can be no retraction and no apology, as there is no insult, but only a plain statement of truth. As a gesture of compromise, and to prove goodwill, we will allow one, broodmaster, to accompany the shipment, provided he is not a priest of any godless religion, so-called. We will not revise the schedule of charges on this occasion, but warn you plainly that this is our final offer. Truly yours.
Grella looked up blankly.
Vyer said, There is a tone to this, my dear Grella, that does not appear consistent with pacifism. Not with pacifism, as I understand the word.
I certainly see what you mean, sir. Nevertheless, they are pacifists. We have carefully checked our information.
And we are certain they are not members of the Federation?
Absolutely certain.
Well, there is something here that we do not understand. This message could not be better planned if it were a bait to draw us to the attack.
It is certainly an insulting message, but one well suited to our purpose.
That, too, is suspicious. Events rarely fall into line so easily.
Excellency, they are religious fanatics. There is the explanation.
Nevertheless, we must draw the net tighter before we attempt to take them. Such utter fearlessness usually implies either a formidable weapon or a formidable protector. We must be certain the Federation does not have some informal agreement with this planet.
Excellency, Admiral Nade grows impatient.
Vyer's right-hand claw quivered.
We will give him the chance to do the job once we have done ours. We must make certain we do not send our troops straight into the jaws of a trap. There is a strong Space Force fleet so situated that it might intervene.
General Larson of the Space Force looked up from copies of the messages. The only place in this end of space where we can store supplies with no spoilage, and they have to wind up in a fight with the lobsters over royal lobster eggs, and we aren't allowed to do anything about it.
Well, sir, said Larson's aide. They were pretty insulting about it, and they've had every chance to join the Federation. It's hard to see why the Federation should take on all Krustax for them now.
All Krustax nuts. The lobsters would back down if we ram a stiff note down their throat. Do we have any reply from the, Court of Last Resort on this?
No, sir. They haven't replied yet.
Much as I dislike them, they don't pussyfoot around anyway. Let's hope... There was a quiet rap, and Larson looked up. Come in. The communications officer stepped in, looking serious.
I wanted to bring you this myself, sir. The Interstellar Patrol declines to intervene because it feels that the locals can take care of themselves.
Larson stared.
They're a bunch of pacifists. All they're strong at is fighting off temptation.
Yes, sir. We made that point. All we got back was wait and see.
Well, we tried at least. Now we've got a ringside seat for the slaughter.
Admiral Nade was in his bunk when the top priority message came in. His aide entered the room, approached the bunk, and hesitated. Nade was completely covered up, out of sight. The aide looked around nervously. The chief was a trifle peevish when roused out of a sound sleep. The aide put the message on the admiral's cloak of rank on the nightstand near the bunk, retraced his steps to the hatch, opened it wide, then returned to the bunk. Hopefully, he waited. But Nade didn't stir. The aide spoke hesitantly.
A message, sir.
Nothing happened. He tried again. Nade didn't move. The aide climbed over the raised lip of the catch tray, took hold of the edge of the bunk, dug several claws into the wood in his nervousness, and cautiously scratched back a little of the fine white sand. The admiral was in there somewhere. He scratched a little more urgently. A few smooth pebbles rattled into the tray. Just then, he bumped something. Claws shot up. Sand flew in all directions. The aide fell over the edge of the tray, scrabbled violently, and hurled himself through the doorway. The admiral bellowed,
"Who dares?"
The aide rounded corners and shot down cross corridors as the admiral grabbed his cloak of rank, then spotted the message. Nade seized the message, stripped off various seals the message machine had plastered on it, growled,
"The fool probably wants more delays."
Then he tore open the light-proof envelope that guaranteed no one would see it but him, unfolded the message itself, and snarled,
"Received your message number 4E673FS. While I agree, bah, extreme caution is advised. That clawless wonder. Let's see, what's this? Provided due consideration is given to these precautions, you are hereby authorized to carry out the seizure by force of the aforesaid planet, its occupation, its annexation, and whatever ancillary measures may appear necessary or desirable. You are, however, warned on no account to engage forces of the Federation in battle, the operation to be strictly limited to the seizure, etc., of the aforesaid planet. If possible, minimum damage is to be done to the planet's storage equipment, as possession of this equipment should prove extremely valuable. Well, he's a hard shell after all. Let's see. Security against surprise by Federation forces will be employed without, however, endangering success of the operation by undue dividing of the attacking force. That doesn't hurt anything. Now, the quicker we take them, the better.
He whipped his cloak of rank around him, tied it with a few quick jerks of his manipulators, strode into the corridor, and headed for the bridge, composing an ultimatum as he went. Elder Phillips examined the message and cleared his throat.
"We appear to have a war on our hands."
Deacon Bentley made a clucking noise.
"Let's see."
Phillips handed him the message. Bentley sat back.
Due to your deliberately insulting references to our religion, to your slandering of our gods, and to your refusal to withdraw the insult, we are compelled to extend clause in battle to defend our honor. I hereby authorize the fleet of Krustax to engage in lawful combat, and have notified Federation authorities as the contiguous independent power in this region that a state of war exists. Signed, Iadrubel Vire, Chief Commander of the Forces.
Well, it appears, Elder, that our message was not quite up to Brother Fry's level. There's more to this.
Did this all come in at once?
It did, Deacon. The first part apparently authorizes the second part.
Quite a different style, this. I, Arvast Nade, Commander Battle Fleet 4, hereby demand your immediate surrender. Failure to comply within 1 hour, your time, following receipt of this ultimatum, as determined by my communications center, will open your planet to pillage by my troops. Any attempt at resistance will be crushed without mercy, and your population decimated in retaliation. Any damage or attempted damage by you to goods or facilities of value on the planet will be avenged by execution of leading citizens selected at my command.
By my fiat as conqueror, your status, retroactive to the moment of transmission of this ultimatum, is that of bondsleg to the conquering race. Any lack of instantaneous obedience will be dealt with accordingly. Signed, Arvast Nade, Battle Fleet Commander. Deacon Bentley looked up. What do we do with this?
I see no alternative to activating war preventive measures, as described in Chapter 38 of the Lesser Works.
I was afraid of that.
Well, so be it. We can't have a war here. As soon as we saw a few of these heathen loose on the planet, we'd all revert to type. You know what that is.
Well, let's waste no time. You take care of that, and I'll answer the ultimatum. Common courtesy requires that we answer it, I suppose.
Arvast Nade got the last of his battle armor on and tested the joints.
There's a squeak somewhere.
Sir?
Said his aide blankly.
There's a squeak. Listen!
It could be heard plainly. Squeak, 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 squeak. The aide got the oil can.
Work your claws one at a time, sir. Let's see. Again. There it is.
Ah, good,
said Nade, working everything soundlessly.
That's what comes of too long a peace, and this stuff is supposed to be rust-proof.
There was a polite rap at the door. The aide leaned outside and came back with a message.
For you, sir. It's from the storehousers.
Good. Wait till I get a handout through this. Ugh, the thing is stiff. There, let's have it.
Reaching out with a manipulator through a kind of opened trap door in the armor, and almost knocking loose a hand weapon clamped to the inside, Nade took hold of the message, which was without seals or embellishments, as befitted the mouthings of slegs. Behind the clear visor, Nade's gaze grew fixed as he read. From Central Contracting Office, Penitence City, Planet of Faith, to Arvast Nade, Commander, Battle Fleet 4, Crosstax. Dear Sir, we regret to inform you that we must decline the conditions mentioned in your message of the second instant. As you may be aware, the planetary government of the planet Faith does not recognize war, and can permit no war to be waged on or in the vicinity of this planet. Our decision on this matter is final, and is not open to discussion. Truly yours, Hugh Bentley, Chief Assistant, Central Contracting Office. Nade dazedly handed the message to his aide.
And just how, he demanded, are they going to enforce that?
Elder Phillips's hand trembled slightly as he reached out to accept the proffered hand of the robed figure.
Judge Archer Goodwin, said the dignitary politely.
Elder, I bring you tidings of your eldest son, and I fear you will not find them happy tidings.
Phillips kept his voice level.
I suspected as much, Judge. With due allowance for the fallibility of human judgment, Lance appears unsuited to a life of peace. Study bores him. Conflict and its techniques fascinate him. He is pugnacious, independent. He sees life in terms of conflict. He is himself authoritative, though subject to subordination to a superior authority. He is not dull. The acquisitions of useful skills and even a quite deep knowledge are well within his grasp, potentially. However, his basic bent is in another direction. On a different planet, we might expect him to shine in some limited but strategically placed field, using it as a springboard to power and rank. Here, to allow him to pass into the populace would require us, out of fairness, to allow others to do the same. But the proportions of such traits are already so high that our way of living could not endure the shock. You see, he not only possesses these traits, plus a lust to put them in action, but he sees nothing wrong with this. Accordingly, he will not attempt to control his natural tendencies. Others of even greater combativeness have entered our population, but have recognized the sin of allowing such tendencies sway, unless the provocation is indeed serious. Then,
Judge Goodwin's face for an instant bent into a chilling smile, which he at once blinked away. He cleared his throat.
I am sorry to have to bring you this news.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?